Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Here today with a fantasy mailbag podcast, and initially I was going to be doing this podcast alone, but I have been joined at the last minute by a very special guest, and if you're watching this, you can probably see who it is already, but you may not know because I didn't promote it beforehand. I'm joined by a very special guest. I'm joined by the one and only Seth Klein. Seth, how are you going?
I'm doing well. I like the drum roll. It's new for me.
just something a little bit different. Trying to get a few sound effects involved in the show. There won't be too many of those, but Seth, it's good to have you on. Now, let's kick things off. New season, new fantasy season, new NBA season about to start. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Seth Da Sportsman, SethDaSportsman. I'm the fantasy vampire. I don't sleep. I'm up all the time answering all your questions, trade questions, start sits, draft questions. Follow me there. And you can find my writing at thefantasyfix.com, my rankings at fantasypros.com, also my DFS articles at fantasydraft.com, and also be sure to check out allstar5.com, where you can also find Josh and our advice with a great group of guys there. It's a new site we're starting up.
Yeah, so it's myself, it's Seth, it's Mark Roberts, it's Matt Smith, and it's Joseph Mamone as well. So the five of us over at allstar5.com. So do check that out and see what you think. I think it's a pretty nice initiative that we've started off. Now, Seth, what I was going to do and what I am going to do in today's podcast, we're going to look at fantasy mailbag. So I asked for questions from the listeners, and you guys responded fantastically. I hope we have time to get through them all. If not, I'm sure I'll do another mailbag podcast before the season starts. Let's not waste any time, Seth. Let's get straight into it. Todd Alexander on Twitter, at Toddy Alexander, and Todd was in the Listener League yesterday. If you're starting a dynasty this year, would you prefer to win now, mixed, or plan for the future? Seth, how do you approach it?
If I'm doing a startup dynasty, I try to win now. That's it. I worry about the future of that later on. Win the money now. I'm not trying to wait 2 years to win my money back. If you're in your second or third season, yeah, sure, you gotta look at things a different way. But if it's a startup, win now. Certainly, if you're later on in your draft, I prefer to grab some younger guys that may not even play a lot this year, but could be good in the future. Or you could use as trade chips to teams that are rebuilding. As opposed to, you know, an older player that would sit on your bench regardless.
I'm exactly with you. And I feel like that's definitely the best way to go about it, is win now. And the reason I say that is because you know what guys are going to do this season for the most part. 2 years down the track, who knows where players are going to be playing? Who knows what players are going to be drafted onto their team to take their role? What injuries would have happened? How aging will have affected these guys, which players have come out of nowhere and jumped up ahead of these guys in the rankings. But for this year, you can treat it almost like a redraft league. You know, and the other thing is that so many people in dynasty leagues, they skew the other way. They go super hard on rookies. They spend a lot of money in a rookie auction, and they go hard on young players, and they don't compete for the first year. Whereas you can get in there, you know, snipe up guys like Tim Duncan, you know, a guy like Kobe Bryant, Paul Pierce, these sort of guys who you can get so late, because they end up sliding 30, 40 picks in a dynasty snake draft. You get them, win the first season, and then work it out from there. You still got to take a little bit of youth, but it's not crazy to do a dynasty startup and not draft a single rookie, because you can still get value in other areas, and I'd be going hard after winning the first year. Maybe putting a little bit of spin or a bit of bias towards the first two seasons, but I'm not projecting anything further than that, because it's just too hard. We have no idea of how things are going to happen in 3 years' time, let alone 2 years' time. Next one, questions comes from Vlad, but I think we'll tackle that one a little bit later. So Vlad, I will get to your question. Rich Newell on Twitter at RackMJN1. I think this is a pretty straightforward one as well, Seth. Aside from collusion, should a trade ever be vetoed?
Well, you should know my answer from playing in league for me. Absolutely not. The only other time I will consider vetoing a trade, if it's not collusion, though it sort of borders on collusion, is if you're like right at the trade deadline, maybe the trade deadline is a couple of weeks before your playoffs or the season ends, and while the two teams may have not discussed this previously, which would be collusion, them discussing it, one of the teams like, screw it, I'm out of it. I'm going to have some fun and trade all my players. And they offer the guy in first place all their good players for one good player and a bunch of scrubs. And the first place team's looking at it, it's like, all right, I'll accept. I mean, they may have not actually colluded via text or phone or whatever, but in that sort of a situation where you're a trade is completely top heavy right near the end of the season, that's vetoable. But other than that, look, you pay your money, you join your league, you're free to manage it however you want. If you're an idiot and you make a dumb trade, that's on you. Good for the other team for maneuvering it and talking you into it. And that's just how it is. It's fantasy, but everyone has the right to manage a team how they want.
Exactly. People do whatever they want. And yeah, collusion, veto. But if you think a deal is unfair, not your problem. Just the deal goes through. And that situation that you mentioned is one where you're like, if someone goes, I'll trade you, you know, I'll trade you LeBron James for Aaron Aflalo, you go, that is a clear, and that's collusion to a degree, because it's not in anyone, it's not in the best interest of the team. It's designed to manipulate the league, and I think that's what collusion is. It's a trade designed to manipulate the league, and that's the sort of thing where it goes. But just because you think that someone got ripped off because they traded Roy Hibbert and the other person got back Danilo Gallinari, you go, that's not fair. That's not for you to decide as a commissioner. That's not for other people to vote against. It's, you know, you might think that's dumb, but the other person might have had so many extra three-pointers and they didn't need them, but they really needed Hibbert's two blocks or the 16 rebounds that he got today, which was odd. We don't see Roy Hibbert get 16 rebounds in a game ever. You can't make judgments on that sort of stuff. So I have all leagues that I'm in, or I think I've done it this year, in every league that the trades are set to commissioner veto only. I'm the commissioner in those leagues, and I'm basically allowing anything unless it looks sus to me, and then that's it. It's out. It's done. Next question from Matt Matawarren, who's on Twitter, at Matt Matawarren. John Wall or Damian Lillard at the end, pick 9, of a 10-team, 9-category league, and who do you pair them with? I'm pretty straightforward on who I want at this point. I want John Wall at pick 9. He's my 9th guy. After those first 8 players, I think there's a definite drop-off between 8 and 9. I want John Wall at pick 9. Do you want Wall or Lillard or someone else?
Wall, easy answer for me there.
You know, I see so many posts go up from people on forums that, like, you know, I'm picking at pick 14, John Wall will probably slide to me. I'm thinking, not if I'm drafting. Like, I don't understand these people who are letting Wall slide so far, because they go, oh, he doesn't score enough, or he doesn't hit threes. I don't care if he doesn't hit threes. It doesn't matter that he's not hitting 1.5 threes as a point guard later on. You go and grab CJ Miles in the last pick and get two threes from him. You can't get 10 assists from anybody. You can get it from Chris Paul. You can get it from John Wall. And you may be able to get close to it with Reggie Jackson. That's it. You can't get it anywhere else. And you know, he's also going to be a guy who gets you 2 steals a game. He's also going to throw in above average block numbers for a point guard as well. He's an okay rebounder. It's clearly John Wall to me. And he's not a field goal percentage killer either. In terms of who to pair him with, who do you look to pair him with at in your 10-team league? So we're talking about pick 12 on the way back. Which way do you go with Wall there?
You know, I don't have a problem there going with a Marcus Gasol or Kawhi Leonard, even Blake Griffin. I sort of have a weakness for Blake Griffin. Pairing him with a rebounder, a guy that's going to shoot good percentage from the field, guy like Gasol and Griffin offered pretty good assists as well for a big man. So you basically give yourself a guy that could lead the league in assists, pair him with a big man that could get 4 to 6 assists a game. You know, you sort of almost don't have to get a point guard till, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th round again. Maybe fill in a spot in the middle with like a Tyreek Evans or something like that. And you're looking pretty good in assists while keeping your field goal percentage good, adding some rebounds and all that.
Yeah, I think that you want to go big at that spot. And John Wall, as dumb as this might sound, and this is where people need to understand the theory in punting categories, John Wall's a really good punt free throw point guard. Like he's not Rajon Rondo, he's not Alfred Payton, he's not a guy shooting 60% from the line, but his free throw percentage is not why you pick him. You don't pick John Wall because he shoots 78% from the line. So you could, yeah, and this is something that I tried to do the other day. I picked John Wall at 9 and then I picked Rudy Gobert with the next pick, but I could have gone with DeAndre Jordan, and then you've got big assist numbers. You're probably also punting points at that stage, so that's another thing to consider. But I want a big man to get my field goal percentage up there. I want to get some blocks. I want to get some rebounds in as well. And then you've got those high assist numbers, and his assist numbers are so high that you can buoy your number without having to grab assists with the next pick. So I would definitely be looking big. Yeah, even Paul Millsap, Al Horford, Marc Gasol is an option that you mentioned there. If you want to go that punt route, you can go Gobert, you can go Jordan, you can go Andre Drummond even. And it's probably not great value for Drummond because you might be able to get him in the 20s. But that's, I would want to go with a big man there at that point. I don't think I'd be too thrilled with pairing him with, say, a Jimmy Butler or a Klay Thompson. You could easily make it work, but I want to go big at that stage. Oscar Morales on Twitter at @the_OscarRita. Which ranking list should head-to-head leagues observe? Now, the reason I included this question here, Seth, is that I just want to make it clear again when I talk about rankings lists, you never go off rankings lists. You should never draft off a list and go, okay, the next guy on the list at number 50, he's the top guy there, I'm picking him. It doesn't work that way. It's not about drafting the best players, it's about creating the best team. So you can have a rankings list, but in essence, and I said, you're probably sick of me hearing this, everyone listening, that the difference between guys between 20 and 40 is so small. The difference between guys between 40 and 100, I think each time I say it, the numbers change. But in that range, it's so small. It's not a matter of let's look at a ranking list and, oh, but you've got him at 58 and John Jones has got him at 57. Why are you down on him? Like, it doesn't matter. That's not the point. You don't go off a list and go, I'm taking the next guy off the list, because if you do, you'll lose. You'll see auto. If you're in a draft and there's an auto picker, that's what they do. And where do they come? Pretty low. It doesn't work that way. You've got to make the best team, not pick the best players. Do you have a differing thought on that, Seth?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's not bad to look at different, you know, writers, experts, whatever you want to call them, rankings, sort of do your rankings, see what they think. It's essentially like getting a second, third, fourth opinion.
Yeah, but exactly.
You should go with what you want. I mean, I was just kind of perusing, you know, every site has rankings up now, and I'm perusing the rankings, and, you know, I'm looking at my rankings, and in roto leagues, I have Al Horford as a top 20 guy, yep. You know, give or take. And I'm looking over, I just clicked on ESPN's. They have Horford as like right below 50.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I mean, that's a 30, you know, player difference in ranking. But let's say they had him at 40 and I have him at 20. The difference between 40 and 20 might be a half block and an extra rebound a game.
It's not big.
You know, it's so little the difference, where you just got to go off feel, the guys you like, pairing the right players, knowing which categories you're punting, which ones you're playing, and all that. And in the end, the difference between the 20 and 40 or the 30 and 60 is going to be so slight, it's not going to really matter at the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you talk about, like, I've got these guys, say, you know, Al Horford was a guy you mentioned. I've got him at 20 in my 8-cat roto rankings. And the guys around there is Gordon Hayward, Blake Griffin, Marc Gasol, Victor Oladipo, you know, Jimmy Butler, Nick Vucevic are all in that point. But they all do so different things that, if you want to pick Horford at 14, you pick him. If you want to let him slide to 26, you pick him. It just really depends on the way you want to build your team. So going off straight off a rankings list is fraught with danger, but it is a good idea to read them and see where people value them and get a sort of an overall consensus. And you know, the stuff over on Fantasy Pros, they've got consensus expert rankings. You can see where everyone is ranked over there as well, and gives you an idea of sort of where people are valuing them, knowing where to pick the players. But what you mentioned, one thing goes wrong, they have a bad season shooting from the field, something goes wrong, other players on their team are injured, and it drops their field goal percent by 2%, and they drop 15 spots. That's what happens. So to me, a number in a ranking is a very overrated part of planning a fantasy basketball draft, or planning your strategy for a fantasy basketball draft.
Yeah, it's just a good guide to sort of go by. I mean, I'm one of the 15 rankers on Fantasy Pros.
And, I'm one of them as well.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Oh, are you new? Yeah, that's nice. That's awesome. I didn't see you there later. Congrats. That's nice. We can battle our rankings. I see you right there. Yeah, and I'll start to, you know, if you look right now, you'll see that, for instance, LeBron James, he's ranked 7th as the consensus, okay, as an average. His best ranking is 2 overall. I'm, you know, without looking at who did it, someone ranked him 2nd. His worst is 14.
Wow.
Someone has 14. Finishing as the 14th best player this season. That's highly unlikely.
Seems wrong.
Anything's possible, of course, but you can look at the deviation between that. John Wall, I mean, I don't know what's going on here. Maybe some people have not set them correctly, but John Wall, someone has him going as bad as 28th.
Wow.
So you could, I don't know. Maybe some people set them wrong or default. I don't know. But regardless, everyone's going to have a different opinion. Actually, nobody has the same opinion because Davis is one, the best, but someone has him 4th.
Okay.
Curry, has him 5th.
I've got Davis 2nd. So there's always, everything's going to be different.
Right. Somebody has him not number one or not, like I have Curry 1st as well. So, over Davis. So no matter what, out of 15 player rankers, somebody is thinking differently or there's people thinking differently. So use that as a guide, but form your own opinion.
And even at the end of the season, if Curry comes in at number one and the majority of people had Davis at number one and he comes in at number two, it means nothing in the whole scheme of things. It might mean one less pat on the back for a fantasy ranker, but it means nothing in the way things run for your draft. It's not about that. As I said, it is about creating a team, not about drafting the best player. I think that's probably, I'm going to get that tattooed on my ass, I think, that phrase, because it's something I've said about a million times this offseason.
Right, exactly. If you draft Curry, you may win threes. If you draft Davis, you may win blocks. They like you said earlier, each player is usually providing different stats, and most often one has better in one than another. So it's really about assembling the best all-around team and not saying you had the number one player.
Yeah, exactly. It's about the whole team. It's almost, it's not the same, but it's almost like creating a basketball team. You want the best team. You don't want a team with a couple of great players on it. Or that saying is always there that, a champion team will always beat a team of champions. And the same sort of thing goes in fantasy basketball. If they don't fit together, it's no point. Now, the next question is an interesting one from Slim Bean, who's on Twitter at DunksAfterDarko. Your best top 60 or top 70 ranked three-man pairings to form the spine of your fantasy team. Give us a few great combos. Now, this could go, I could talk about this for an hour, I reckon. I won't. But Seth, who do you like as a couple of good three-man pairings?
If we want to talk about who we already talked about, let's say we go Wall with Gasol, and then you come back to, I may even go like Rudy Gay if he's available there,
yep.
or Hayward. Now you're getting someone that can hit some threes, score it with volume, add some more rebounds. You want to go in maybe a different direction and you want to go big again and pad those rebounds again because you've already got a few assists with Gasol or Griffin, then maybe in Ibaka because, Griffin's not really going to get you blocks. So maybe you go with Ibaka who will hit you some threes, get you a few rebounds, also get you some blocks, shoot good percentages. That's sort of a range. I think starting off either sort of gathering a grouping of all the major stats combined, maybe saving whatever you're gonna not worry about turnovers or free throw percentage or something, but getting in a combination of 8 of the 9 categories, or get one great and then sort of chip away at the other few, which you can kind of do in this situation. It leaves you with nothing really bare in the cupboard, so to speak.
There's literally, I might say millions, but there's literally thousands of combinations that you can get that you can make work. And it's about, combining the 13 guys, not necessarily the 3 guys. Like in a draft that you and me win on the weekend, I had pick 9 and I picked John Wall at that spot. And then I had 16, it was a 12-man league, so I picked Rudy Gobert there. And at that stage, okay, you know what? I'm punting points and I'm possibly punting free throws. In the next one, assists aren't easy to get. So I went with Reggie Jackson at pick 33. So I started my first three with Wall, Gobert, and Jackson. Pretty good, really good assist numbers. Some good field goal percentage, some nice rebounds, some nice blocks. And then I followed up with the next pick with Dwight Howard. So I went point guard big, So I've got nice rebounds, nice blocks, good field goal percentage. My assists are right up there. I should get some decent steal numbers because Howard's a pretty good steal guy. And this is a league that counts double-doubles as well. So John Wall, Reggie Jackson, Dwight Howard, and Rudy Gobert can all get me double-doubles. And there's not many point guards who do that. So there's so many ways.
That in our league?
What was that?
I think that's in my league, right?
It's in your league, yeah. That's the one that's
yeah,
the one we did on the weekend.
Yeah, that sounded familiar. And then you said the double-doubles, and I was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one we did on the weekend. So, and look, I just kept going back and forth. Then I went another center. Then I went another point guard. Then I went another point guard. Then I went another center. And I was stacking up on these categories, you know, especially with double-doubles included. But it was, there's so many threats. I could bring up what I've done in other leagues and give you an idea of the way that I paired guys together. So the other one that we did the week before, the Superstars of Fantasy Draft, where I had pick 8, and I don't remember exactly who I picked, but I am going to bring that up now. As my starting point, you know, I started with Chris Paul. I backed it up in round 2 with Carmelo Anthony because I really wanted points. I wanted to get points there. And then I got LaMarcus Aldridge in round 3. Yeah, because I was valuing getting points early because points are so hard to get after the first few rounds. They drop off dramatically. And, you know, Aldridge was a guy, I was punting blocks, so Aldridge is not a good block guy. Mallow's obviously not. Chris Paul's not. I got, you know, that, so I was, my points were pretty good. I got good assist numbers, I got good steals, my threes were, you know, started off okay. There's so many ways that you can go about it. But you really need to just concentrate on what you're doing with your team and not hurting big categories, and that's probably the percentages are the biggest ones there. You don't want to really nullify someone's main areas of strength at times. You want to build your team to make sense, no overkill with, yeah, there's a lot of nuance to it. That question, I said, it could go on for ages, but you can combine pretty out of the top 30 guys, pretty much all of them together in some way, and it will give you a pretty decent base, but then you've got to really, you know, hone in on the guys that you want after that. Lee Wilkinson asks on Twitter at Leroy_10, what are your preferred punting categories? Is it easier to punt a particular category? Now, Lee, all I'll say there is that rebounds is probably the hardest one to get value out of because so many guys rebound. But otherwise, I don't have a preferred one. It really depends on who I get at the first round or two or who I think I can get at that stage. I think the blocks is relatively easy to punt because the value in blocks is concentrated in so few guys. Jordan, Ibaka, Gobert, they're getting a stack of blocks, but there's not many guys who then get two. Like those guys are at 2.5, 3. Anthony Davis obviously as well. But then there's not many guys. The next guy's coming at like 1.5. So there's a big drop off. So if you're not getting one of those, it does make it harder to compete in that area. But I'm picking at pick 7 and I'm punting assist because I want to know who I'm getting at pick 7 first. Because if Chris Paul falls to me at 7, I'm not going to let him go. And then I'll adjust the strategy of what I do from there. So it really depends on who I get with that first pick, and then I've got a couple of different ways that I can go with it. Every player sort of gives you a couple of directions you can go in that sort of strategy. Now, you're not a big punting person, Seth. How do you look at that?
Yeah, I'm not as big of a punter as you, but I do punt. So far this year, I think I've done about 5 or 6 drafts. The thing I'm punting the most are assists.
Yep.
If I'm not getting a top assist guy to start, I'm going big scoring, and then I'm filling in assists with guys like Monta Ellis, Tyreke Evans, Brandon Knight later on. I'm not going to, you know, in head to head leagues, I'm not going to win assists every week, but I think with guys like that, maybe making a trade further down the line, I can win 30 or 40%. Of the weeks in assists. In roto leagues, I'm happy getting, you know, in a 12-team league, I'm happy finishing 8th or 9th in assists if it means boosting the other categories, as long as I'm not taking a 0, which I don't think I would with using those strategies. Turnovers is just something I don't even pay attention to.
Don't pay attention to turnovers.
Whatever. Yeah. Certainly, I don't love punting free throws, but you want to build a team based on blocks and rebounds and go the DeAndre Drummond type route, you're obviously punting free throws and you can sort of just focus on everything else. field goal punt percentage punting as a way to go, like you have in a couple leagues.
Yeah, I think I've done everything. I've punted free throws. I've punted points. I've punted threes. I've punted assists. I've punted. I don't think I have punted is steals. I think they're all, but I am in probably 10 or 11 leagues. But overall, I've used a different strategy in most of them. I'm not, you know, I've definitely punted points, threes, rebounds, you can't really do it. Assists, blocks, field goal, free throw, and turnovers. I've punted all those categories.
Yeah. And I go into a draft assuming I'm going to punt at least one or two categories, but I don't go into the draft planning what I'm going to punt. The first two rounds, I usually take the best player available or the two guys I want the most. After that, I look at the two guys I have, or if I'm, you know, drafting earlier, maybe the three guys I have, because I'll get two more pretty quickly on the turn, and then say, okay, these are the two or three guys I have. Now, how do I approach? You know, so I'm certainly not going to say, oh, well, I drafted John Wall and Kyle Lowry's available. I'm not going to take him because they already have assists or whatever it may be. I sort of make a decision afterwards. You know, I've had a number of questions on Twitter already about, well, if I take this guy in the first round, who should I take in the second, you know, or should I choose between this guy, and this guy in the second round? I was like, look, if this one player is available, take him. He's the best player of the three. Worry about your punting. Worry about positions after that. Build your core and then worry. That's how I sort of go. You could get a pretty clear picture of which categories you're going to be strong in, which categories you can push for after your first couple picks, and you see sort of who's still on the board, the trends, which teams maybe have already, you know, you may have gotten John Wall, but there may be three other teams that have already gotten two point guards. So you're saying, okay, look, getting another point guard may not be worth it because I'm going to be reaching a little bit. You got to look at all that, but I don't choose what to punt until after I've made it two or three selections.
The next question comes from Fabio, who's on Twitter at @_FabioLugo. And this one to me is straightforward as well. We'll see what you think, Seth. Choose one to break out this season: Aaron Gordon, TJ Warren, Zach LaVine, or Nikola Mirotic. And to me, it's Mirotic. It's clearly Mirotic. A lot of people haven't bought in on Mirotic. I've got him projected at 30 minutes a game, and I was discussing that with someone over on Basketball Monster today, and they said that seems crazy that he's getting 30 minutes a game. Well, okay, is it? I've got Pau Gasol at 31. I've got Joakim Noah at 29 minutes and Taj Gibson at 20. Do those numbers seem crazy? I think that seems about right. He balled out yesterday. I think that 30 is probably right in the middle. I could see him getting 31. I could see him getting 28. But I think that he's, out of those four guys, he is clearly the best option there.
Yeah, I agree. He's far and away the best option there. I think LaVine, now that he's starting, though I'm not sure how long that lasts.
Oh, he's been dreadful.
Yeah, he's just not a shooting guard. And I think if Rubio is out or gets hurt again, and they put him at the point, I like that.
I think they won't, though. I think they'll run Tyus Jones there. I think they'll run – it depends on how bad they are. I think they'll run Jones and Miller there. I was really skeptical of LaVine when they drafted him, that I don't know if this guy's going to be a player. He put in some good numbers last year, but in a real extraordinary circumstance where he was playing point guard with nobody around him, basically. He's not playing that position this year. I still think that he should be drafted in every league, and we'll see how it plays out, but I'm not going inside the top 100 for him. But I'm not convinced he's a good player or ever going to be a good player.
I think he's going to be one of those. He's clearly a fun player to watch.
No, of course.
And I think his athleticism and will keep him in the league for a while. I think he'll continue to improve, but certainly not a guy I'm going to reach for. I picked him up off the waivers and immediately traded him in our Superstars of Fantasy League yesterday, if you saw that trade.
I did.
I traded LaVine completely. I started punting assists the whole time, and then I completely punted. I traded him, Rondo, and LaVine, Rondo, and Wilson Chandler for Tobias Harris, Mo Williams, and Robin Lopez. I sort of really like that trade. But I like Warren, possibly the breakout closer to midseason. PJ Tucker is still there, and he's a very good defensive player. He's upped his offensive game. The Suns like him. I don't see Warren stealing away tons of minutes from him just yet. And Aaron Gordon's still Aaron Gordon. He's a great summer league player, but he's stuck behind a lot of, you know, big men in Orlando. He's hurt again. He's missing a lot of crucial preseason time right now. Again, it may be a guy that second half, once the Magic are going to be out of playoff contention, he gets more minutes. But unless it's a 14-teamer league or more, Mirotić is the only guy I'm considering here. Levine maybe in the last couple of rounds if you're punting assists and you're trying to get some cheap, you know, 4 or 5 assists a game from him at the end. But I agree with you with Mirotić. I think he'll get the minutes. I think Noah is going to lose substantial minutes this season. He's going to be a free agent. I don't think he's in their future plans. He'll be hurt at some point. I do think Mirotić is better suited for Roto, where you don't have to sort of think about it, because with that front court, and we saw it last year, he has Mirotić crazy games, and then the next game he'll score 7 points with 2 rebounds. And you don't want that in head-to-head. You don't want that to be a Sunday matchup where you have him in and he throws up a dud. But in Roto, look, it only matters what he totals at the end of the season.
That's a good point. That's definitely a good point about it. But yeah, look, it's clear to me that it's Mirotić. Now, the next question comes in. Actually, before I do that, quick shout out to Maurice Ager, who just followed me, former NBA player Maurice Ager just followed me on Twitter as we were recording this. So shout out Maurice. Don't know why you followed me, but thank you for doing that, just to up my NBA player quotient in my Twitter followers. So shout out to Maurice Ager. That's a bit of a rant.
Hey, thanks, Maurice.
Now, the next question comes from GS, who's on Twitter at GGWESTUT. I think we've covered this question, but I'll just give him a shout out anyway. Looking for general drafting advice, keeping in mind positional scarcity and abundance in the NBA. We mentioned that before. Points, assists, hard to get. Blocks are hard to get. Rebounds, three-pointers, easiest to get. It's also really tough to get your percentages up towards the end of the draft as well. There's not many guys who actually influence the percentage category. So look, if you're looking to compete in things like assists and points, you need to make sure you're getting them early, because you're just not going to be able to find them. And there seems to be a thought process going around that, oh, don't worry, you can get points later in the draft. Well, can you? Where? I don't. It's real tough to do it. You can't really get points later in the draft. Last season, okay, Seth, how many guys do you reckon averaged 18 points a game in the NBA last season?
How many points?
18. Well, 18 or more.
19 or more in the NBA.
18.
I will go with the same number. I'll go with 18.
Yeah, it was 25, which is less than one per team. So there's not many guys. Look, 18's not a huge amount of points. There's not – to actually sort of be quite competitive in a 10 or 12 team league in the points category, your team needs to average around 15 to 15.4 points per game. Like, you need to get some of these guys, and there's not a huge amount of them around. So it's not, and they all go. All the points are within the guys who were picked in the first 25 to 30 picks. There's not many. Like, Isaiah Thomas is around, and DeMar DeRozan is around late. But who is there late in drafts after pick 40 that averages 17 points a game?
You got like the Kevin Martins, maybe, but guys like that are strictly points and threes.
There's not many guys.
Not much.
Eric Spiropoulos, and I was on Eric's podcast yesterday, the 94 Feet podcast, so make sure you check out that. Eric, who's on Twitter, at Eric Spiros. What are your thoughts on Jeremy Lin's fantasy value this season? I think he's underrated. I think he's underrated too, Eric. I think that he is a guy that you want to make sure is owned in head-to-head leagues, in 12-team leagues. He doesn't need 30 minutes a game. We saw that in Houston when he was the backup behind Patrick Beverley. He was fantasy relevant. With the loss of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, I think Lin is going to benefit the most. Jeremy Lamb might start. PJ Hairston might start. But in the end, Lin is the best player out of that trio, and he will get the biggest role. And he's been really impressive in preseason, especially his haircut. But his fantasy play and his play on the court has been pretty good as well. I think that Lin is a great guy outside in those last two rounds of your draft, 3 rounds maybe. How do you see it?
If you're going to draft him just for the bowl cut alone, I think it's worth it. But I agree with you. I saw that you drafted him in the put up or shut up league. I really like that. Before Kidd-Gilchrist got hurt, the value wasn't quite there. But if he's going to be playing at the two a lot, backing up Walker.
He will. He'll play at the two quite a bit.
Yeah. And Michael Jordan, I think, threw some backing his way this week, said he really liked him. And he's not going to put, like, he's never going to be the guy that we saw in New York a few years ago. He's not going to be scoring 30 points a game. I mean, he may drop like one this year, but he'll get you underrated, you know, assists, rebounds, three steals, shoot well from the lines. He'll have some big scoring games. And I think he'll also run with, he'll get some of that garbage time as well. So I think the Hornets will be improved from last year. I was actually pretty disappointed with them last year. They were one of my breakout teams, and they were bad. But I think when they are trailing games, the game's kind of over, I think he'll get a lot of that point guard time and, you know, the second half when they're trailing, which garbage time's great in really in any fantasy sport. And I like him this year. Yeah, I do like him, and he's basically free. So
pretty much
great bench stash.
Next question comes from Ian Flores, who's on Twitter at FloHeAtKins. That's a mouthful. In a salary league using $80 million cap, how would your rankings adjust for similarly rated players with very different salaries? Now, myself and Kyle McEwen talked about this a couple of weeks ago because me and Kyle are in a dynasty league with a real salary cap. We're at $70 million, and we talked about this. What you need to do is you need to look at the players. You know, good idea is get their Z score value overall and then create a ratio based on their salary and see who's providing the most bang for their buck. You know, in my first pick in that league, I picked Nerlens Noel. My second pick, I picked Alfred Payton because their salary is so low and relatively to what I had to pay to get them, I could actually get a pretty good value. And then at the end, like there's the guys left on the waiver wire, like Marc Gasol's still there, Brook Lopez is still on the waiver wire, Kevin Love's still there, Carmelo Anthony's still on the waiver wire in that league because you can't justify using that salary. And then in the end, I'd saved up enough money and I could pick and choose where I wanted to go. And I was able to grab Kemba Walker late in the second last round, Danilo Gallinari in the third last round because they were sitting there and no one else had any cash left. I'm looking for value guys. Rudy Gobert is probably the number one or close to the number one, sort of, or Anthony Davis is this season. But Gobert on $1 million is superb value. Victor Oladipo on about $4 million is great. Noel, Payton, they're the guys that you want. You want to get, yeah, Steph Curry's pretty, even at $11 million, like that's great value for what he gives you. The guys you want to avoid are those, the guys who just signed extensions, Marcus Aldridge, Marcus Sol, Brook Lopez, they're priced too high to really return great value. You want to create a ratio between salary and overall value and look for the big number there and then target those guys appropriately. Have you had any experience in a real salary league?
I have not, so I trust your judgment here.
Maybe you can trust me more after the season's finished, and hopefully I'll win something. But we'll see how it goes. But that's how I went for it. You know, I picked it. It was a 14-team league, and I picked it pick 13. And Gobert and Oladipo were already off the board. Gobert went at 8, and he was the guy that I was hoping to get. And then Oladipo went at 13, and they were the two guys that I wanted. And I couldn't get either of them at pick 14, so I went with Noel. Oh, sorry, pick 30, and then I went with Noel, and then I went with Payton on the turn, you know, two picks later, because I wanted to make sure I grabbed value guys, because there's not many value guys in the league. They will go the quickest, and that's the way that I approached it. There's a question here from Super Buck Wild on Twitter, at Super Buck Roll. That's Giuseppe. He was in the Listener League draft yesterday. This is an interesting one. I don't really know if we can answer it, but let's try it. What can you see happening in Dallas if they're completely out of the playoff hunt before the trade deadline? Fantasy implications. I don't really see anything that they do in that case. I can't see them. There's no move that's really outstanding to me. Is there one there for you? I don't think Dirk's not getting traded.
No, Dirk's not getting. Yeah, I mean, look, that Dallas team, I don't know. I maybe go on a limb, but I think they're going to be really bad.
Yeah, so they're going to be bad.
Yeah, I mean, they're bad. They're slow. They're old. They're hurt. There's no. I mean, their team is spacing, and they have none because they have a point guard that can't walk and a center who doesn't move. I don't know. It's bad, but I don't even know. Without looking at free agency and all that, I'm not even sure, but certainly anyone that, I mean, I could see them moving like a Devin Harris type to a team that, you know, needs a backup point guard for the playoff run, that type of thing. guy like that, but I don't see them moving Matthews. I mean, no one would take Matthews at this point with that contract and that injury. Definitely not Dirk. And
Parsons isn't going anywhere.
And Parsons too, and Parsons has the injury too, and he's a guy I'm staying away from in every draft I'm in as well.
And I said yesterday, for some reason Chandler Parsons is ranked 29th on ESPN, so please do not draft Chandler Parsons at pick 29. But the one thing I will say about this is that if a trade happens, and a trade happens in Dallas or any other team, just make sure you are listening to the podcast, because every trade that happens throughout the season I'll be breaking down with all the fantasy analysis, and I'll probably be posting articles on Basketball Monster about that as well. So I will have you covered in that situation. JJ, who's on Twitter at Jero1D, does Ibaka shoot above 50% from the field this year, or does he absorb a floor-stretching role and hover around 48%? What do you see with Ibaka? Is he back over 50, or is he staying under it?
I think we see similar numbers to what he had last year. So I'm going to say right under it.
Okay, I think that he goes back. I think he's back over 50%. He's been a 50% shooter for the last four seasons until last year, where he was at 48%. The last 2 months of last season, he was back at 55% when Enes Kanter was there. I think that with KD back, with Kanter in the mix, I think that Ibaka goes back to second half Ibaka and previous seasons Ibaka in terms of his shooting percentage. I've got him currently projected at 51%. And I think that's maybe a little bit conservative. His last four seasons before last one, 54, 57, 54, 54. So I've sort of knocked it down a bit because of his increased ability to hit the three. But I think second half of Barker is more like than what we see compared to what we saw first half of Barker when he was trying to carry the team and he was just jacking up threes like they were going out of control.
Yeah, I would say that if he I don't know. I don't know what's better, because do you want 54% making seven field goals a game? Shooting, let's say, 12 shots a game, or do you want 50% shooting 16 shots a game? So
yeah, you want 50 at 16. Anything above 48, you want to go volume. If there's
right. But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I think that the volume isn't going to be there. So I sort of maybe take back my answer. I think he may be above 50 again. You made a good point about Kanter being there and Durant being back. I just don't think he'll be shooting the ball as much. So he may have a higher field goal percentage, but in the course of the season, because the volume won't be there, I think it'll be sort of equivalent to maybe a 47, 48%, just because it's not going to be boosting your overall field goal percentage as much.
That's a great point. And I think that's pretty spot on. The next question comes from Zach Maria on Twitter at Zach Maria NBA. Are there any good rankings that you like for head-to-head points? Now, I'll let you answer that in a sec, Seth. But this, you know, I say that don't draft off lists. With a points league, you can pretty much draft off a list. If you trust the projections and then you add those projections into your league's scoring system, all you want is one number. You want to know what the overall points are. So if you think a guy is going to get 50 points, and the guy underneath him you think is going to get 45 points, you draft the guy that you get for 50 points. Now, I think you want to look for good projections. I'm happy with the projections we've got on Basketball Monster, and you can generate your own rankings from that based on your league's point settings. There are other projections around, but the ranking should be exactly tied into the projections of their stats. There is no subjectivity in a points league whatsoever. It is about who is going to get you the most points. So have you seen any out there, Seth, for points leagues?
I play in one points league, but it's the one league every year where we draft like the day before the season starts. It's just so straightforward. Go with the guys that you think are going to get the most points. Like you said, the rankings are in order of points. In the end, it's going to be very similar again to what we talked about much earlier about the rankings being 30 and 60. The rankings between 10 and 40 might be separated by
3 points, 4 points. Yeah, it's going to be close.
So insignificant. And I think with points leagues, there's a lot more strategy that comes after the draft, where you get that one guy before he gets hot that was averaging 1.7 points. Injury, he gets hot, you pick him up, and then he shoots up to 3.2 points the rest of the season. It's like almost about making gains as the season goes and accumulating more possible point totals for your team by doing that sort of.
Yeah, everything that you said is spot on. A couple of questions left, Seth, and then we're done here. Dave Freeman on Twitter at D386. Do you think that Vogel could use Monte Ellis like he did with Lance Stephenson 2 years ago as the second unit general to stay afloat while Paul George and George Hill rest? What do you think? What is your take on Monte Ellis for this season?
I think it's more likely that we see Hill in that second unit.
I would love to see Hill in that second unit.
And Monta running the point in that first while Hill is resting. So they have a number of combinations, but as long as Paul George is playing power forward, and we don't know how long that will last or if it will or whatever, but as long as he's quote unquote playing power forward, I don't think they're going to, I think it limits their options.
Yeah. Now, I think you probably see half and half, to be honest. I think you see half the time Monte running it and half the time George Hill running it as they move Rodney Stuckey in and out there and they play some Joseph Young a little bit as well. But I think that you probably see it half and half. I don't think that Monte will start and sit after 3 minutes and then run with the second unit or anything like that. I think they'll integrate them all both of those guys to a degree in that second unit.
Yeah, and Monte's a guy that he should be playing in the high 30 minutes a game. I'm not going to see him resting too much. We saw last year. I mean, he came into games doubtful with injuries and played the whole game. So he's a guy that plays a lot, can play the whole game, can run the point. I don't think you're going to see him on the bench very often.
No, that's pretty spot on. Well, he does play a lot. Last question from Vivek on Twitter at VP90244. He asked two questions. One of them we've already covered in terms of what are the easiest stats to get off the waiver wire. Who are some contract year players that you will be targeting in your drafts this year? He says definitely Batum. Now, what's your take on the contract year phenomenon?
Well, first of all, Vivek is unusually obsessed with Nicholas Batum.
He's a Blazers fan.
Yeah, but he just loves. It's always Batum.
And, I love Batum as well.
I'm sure he's going to listen to this, and I'm sure he's going to know my answer. And it's always been the same. I'm not a Batum guy. I like his game. I just don't ever draft him in fantasy. I don't know. I feel like he gets hurt a lot, and I feel like you're not getting just enough for where you're drafting him. That's just my opinion. I think you get a little bit of everything, but nothing that like, I want a guy that can score. If I'm drafting a guy in the third, fourth round, I want a guy that has the potential to score 30 points a game, and I don't think he does. I mean, I'll have the games where he hits 7 threes, but I don't want a guy that's going to come out and put up 6.4 rebound, 3 assist games, which we've seen him do before that early. That said, certainly a good guy to target if you're targeting contract year guys. Contract year guys are a real thing. I actually wrote an article a couple of weeks ago on the Fantasy Fix about it.
I wrote an article as well.
Yeah. I can give you a link. I'd love to read that. And I can give you a link to mine if you want to put it up on your site at some point. But it's a real thing. It doesn't always guarantee anything, of course. But certainly players are incentivized to play better when they know that they have money on the line. As far as this season, I mean, you have the, excluding, Kevin Durant or whatever, guys like that, that regardless you're going to draft them. I actually like Roy Hibbert as later on.
Yeah, because
I mean, he's going to be on a team. He's clearly going to be given a chance. They paid him as a 1 year kind of prove it deal. He's still relatively young in terms of centers. And I think he's going to have a good season. I think he's a steal. He's another guy that's almost free. 10 team leagues, he's free. Another guy I like is Mike Conley. Mike Conley is a guy I like. Horford, who also is a free agent, who I also am targeting in drafts. Mike Conley's ADP right now, according to Fantasy Pros,
it's low.
It's in the 50s, I believe. It's 39.
Okay.
I'll take Mike Conley around later than Jeff Teague, who's 30th right now. I'll take Mike Conley over Kevin Love, who's 27th. So give me a point guard that's a score, pass, steal, hit threes, shoot great from the line over that. I think there's some incentive there. And as far as him playing well. And, yeah, those are some of the guys I'm looking at in free agency. Jeff Green, actually, I'm sort of naming a lot of Grizzlies here. I think Jeff Green's a guy that he still wants to be a starter somewhere and still be a star somewhere. And I think while his minutes won't be what they've been in the past, I think he's going to be trying to get a contract. Someone's going to give him a deal next. Someone's going to pay him a lot of money next year to start at small forward for them or whatever. And I think he's going to try to take that opportunity.
I'm going to give you a list of names, Seth, and see if you can tell me what they have in common. Brook Lopez, Kevin Love, DeAndre Jordan, Goran Dragic, Thaddeus Young, Rajon Rondo, Jeremy Lin, Patrick Beverley, Robin Lopez, and Amir Johnson.
What do they all have in common?
Correct.
Well, Amir Johnson just signed a contract. Okay. Oh, they just signed deals. Is that the...
All of those guys were free agents last season, so they were playing contract years. And all of those guys had worse per-game rankings in 2014-15, their contract year, than they did the year before. Now, there's a stack of other examples you can use of guys who did better, and that does happen. But you can, as I just reeled off, 10 or 12 names of guys who actually did worse, who are playing for contracts. Robin Lopez was horrible. Thad Young dropped down significantly. Rajon Rondo was bad. Kevin Love, I know he's still got a max deal, but he dropped off clearly a huge amount. DeAndre Jordan was actually worse from a fantasy point of view. You know, his overall 8-cat ranking was worse. There are situations where guys do get better, and the guys I want to look at in that situation are the guys at the end of their rookie contracts. So, last year's examples, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, Draymond Green, Brandon Knight, these guys all had career years because they're more incentivized to play from a contract where they get paid $5 million a year up to a contract where they get paid $16 million a year. It's a big jump than between $16 million to $18 million or $8 million to $10 million. It's not as big of a jump. These guys are coming off rookie contracts, and in case of Draymond Green, he was getting paid nothing as a second-round guy. They're the guys that I want to look at. So the guys you want to look at, Bradley Beal's a player who can do that. Andre Drummond's another one who I think could have a big year in a contract year. Terrence Jones, Myers Leonard, Donatas Motiejunas, all these players. Terrence Ross is another. He's a real late sleeper guy, but he's in a situation where he's coming into the end of his rookie contract. They're the guys that I want to look at, not the players necessarily who are seasoned free agents. The value comes from more the guys who are in their rookie deals and moving on from there. But even then, you can still find examples of guys who suck. So I'm not going out and targeting these guys specifically because they're in a contract year, because it can bite you in the ass.
That's a really good point.
Now, the last question was one that was from Vlad early on, and Seth, you probably can't answer this one, so I'll handle it, and it's from Vlad, who's on Twitter, at @Bejo_. A day in the life of Josh Lloyd. Pretty sure you won't be able to handle that one. It's not really fantasy relevant. A day in the life, well, I get up, I get out of bed, I check Twitter and see that a million things have happened while I've been sleeping. That's pretty standard. Do that. Go and check fantasy sites and forums and posts and any questions that have been directed to me, so go and do that. I head to work, I do my job there, sneakily on Twitter as much as I can or checking what's going on. I come home and I do a podcast, and then I write some articles, and that's pretty much the day. There's a lot of basketball involved in it. It's nothing all that exciting. Trying to sneak as much basketball in my day as possible and trying to get to as many of you guys' questions who send them to me throughout the day as I can. So Vlad, it's a pretty boring answer, but that's basically what it is at the moment. You got anything to add to that, Seth? You got any insights into my life?
You didn't mention talking, DMing with me at 3 a.m. West Coast time.
Yeah, that's my that's my wind down time here. After I've done all my work, I sit on the couch, and then you're still up for some reason.
I usually am in bed, looking at my phone, talking to Josh, and his messages are the last thing I see before I go to sleep.
Or the other thing that I'm doing in my time is having Twitter arguments with you and Zach Ruiz and Matt Smith about the value of DeMar DeRozan and CJ McCollum, as we did yesterday, as back and forth with a million messages about those two guys specifically. So that's what I do. There's a lot of thoughts on on basketball, and gee, do I have this guy projected right? Maybe I'm a little bit off here. How can I tweak it? How can he? Last night about 11:30, went to bed and thought, you know what? I'm not happy with my Zach LaVine projection. I think he's got too many assists. So, you know, go to NBA Wowie and have a look and see what was LaVine's assist rate when Rubio played. What was his assist rate when Rubio didn't play? And it was like 25 compared to 9. I went, Jesus, that's a big difference. If he's playing with Rubio this year, he's not going to get as many assists. So it's just things like that. And that's what's going through my head all the time. And that's probably the most boring thing of anyone could think of. But that's pretty much what's happening at this point.
Yeah, I think that most of my day is consumed with thinking of possible trades to make.
That sounds about right.
Where to go? And I know we joke about it because it really is true. I make an abnormal amount of trades.
Yeah, you do.
In my league.
Seth, I've made a trade this year already. Last year I made one trade for the season. I've made one already this season. The season hasn't even started.
Whoa.
I know.
That's not like you.
I'll tell you the trade.
Maybe you're turning over a new leaf.
I'll tell you the trade. It's in the Red Rock Dynasty League. It's a league where we go 400 players deep, where we did an auction draft, and the players are all kept by their auction price with salaries, and then we nominate contract years. So the trade was I got Bruno Caboclo for $2, locked in for 4 years with 20% escalators each year. So by the end, I'll pay like $350 or $4 for him, whatever it is. And I traded a 2016 second-round rookie draft pick and a 2016 third round rookie draft pick, and I'm hoping those picks are like pick 30 and pick 44.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. I mean, you're going with some potential upside. It may amount to nothing, but good chance that those second and third round draft picks amount to nothing either. So at least you have a guy that you know his situation, you know it can do, rather than an unknown.
Yeah, exactly. And that was my thought. I thought if I can get Caboclo 4 years at $2, I'm pretty happy with that. And again, those second and third round draft choices probably don't amount to anything. So that's my trade. It might be my only trade for the year, but I have made a trade, and that's definitely an improvement on last season. Seth, I think we are done. That was short and sweet. We got through a stack of questions there. We will do another mailbag at some point in the off season. I don't know who will be on the show with me. I don't know when it will be, but rest assured you will hear about it from me on Twitter at some point. Just a quick reminder to everybody, thank you to everyone who's gone out and given those iTunes review. Love the ones that came in so far. I want everyone to go out there. Again, if you haven't done it, just spend 5 minutes and leave a review. It helps significantly. So I do appreciate that. And also make sure you're checking out basketballmonster.com. Go ahead and have a look at the site. There are some fantastic tools over on Basketball Monster. I know, Seth, you use the site and you check out a lot of the stuff there, and you can vouch for its excellence, irrespective of the fact that you're talking to me.
Yeah, I love Basketball Monster. I research all my rankings on there. In fact, I actually use the rankings a lot on there, the ease rankings.
Oh, yes, they're really good.
When I set my DFS lineups, actually a lot, I feel that's an underrated tool, because you can really, while it doesn't translate all the time to DFS points, you can really see which teams play better against certain positions and stats and things like that. I always have that up when I'm setting my lineups.
Yep. You obviously know that I love it, but I've loved Basketball Monster for years, even before I started working there. So check that out, and keep an eye on Hardwood Paroxysm for everything that is coming over there, including the big NBA preview, which I contributed a number of articles to, not fantasy related, just NBA stuff. So you can check out my non-fantasy related thoughts on a few things, including my thoughts on the Chicago Bulls and the Detroit Pistons, who I contributed some articles for. Now, Seth, remind everyone again, if they didn't listen properly at the start of the show, where can they find you on Twitter, and where can they find all the words that you type out?
You can find me on Twitter at Seth Da Sportsman, SethDaSportsman. I feel like you giggle every time I do that.
I do.
You can find all my basketball season-long articles, rankings on thefantasyfix.com. Check it out. I have that article on there about my free agency year players. You can find my player rankings at fantasypros.com. I am going to be doing weekly DFS articles at fantasydraft.com. I currently have NFL articles on there if you're into that. And you can also find me at allstar5.com. If you check out my bio, no one's commented on this since I put it up. I put it up about a week ago. Check out my bio. I have my full description of my position and my status at allstar5.com. I stand by it. and you could always find me on here. Josh's show. I think I'm good for about at least 15 shows a year with Josh, and we always have a good time. And he's still yet to challenge me with my Australian accent.
I was just about to mention that, actually. I was going to tell you to get warmed up.
Go ahead. I'm warming up to it. My sister's fiance, actually, my sister just got engaged tonight. So pretty congratulations to her. Her fiance is from London, and I know it's not Australian, but I always mess around with him and try to do my British accent with him to like kind of make fun of him. And it's just so bad. So you can imagine how bad my Australian one is.
It's pretty bad, but I'm going to give you a bit of time to work on it. And by the time the season rolls around, we're going to get you to test it on there. So make sure you are practicing that. Make sure you are listening to the podcast and, of course, subscribing so you don't miss any opportunity to hear Seth talk with an Australian accent. It is something to behold. Seth, we're done here. Thank you again for coming on last minute and joining me on the show. It's great. It's great having you back on and getting ready for a big season of NBA.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.